Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Oh, hey, love your shoes. If you're hearing this, this is your sign to try those on. Trust us, you can totally pull them off. In fact, try on every shoe here if you want. We won't stop you. In our house, you've got unlimited freedom to play. And hey, fall is the perfect season to do, wear, be whatever you want. And with tons of shoes that get you at prices that get your budget, we'll give you something to brag about. So go ahead, try them on. Let us surprise you.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening to 92.9 FM ESPN, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can also stream live anytime, anywhere on the iHeartRadio app as well as the TuneIn Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. Have to ask, how'd the game go last night?
The game went long. It was a 2.5-hour affair.
Wow.
Got
a high school game, yeah.
Got a little dicey. The Owls prevailed. Owls prevailed 36-23. We had one of those weird scoring nights. There was a safety, a couple of field goals.
Oh, yeah, 26. That's
And we had 36. They had 23. They had some extra point issues and then started going for two. But I don't know. I've been spending the whole day thinking it's Saturday. And unfortunately, it's a work day. So that has been tough. My company, as he is on Fridays, he is, of course, the Commercial Appeals Memphis Grizzlies beat writer. You can also hear him as the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Episodes available every weekday on Twitter at DeMichael C. DeMichael, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. How we doing?
Oh, man.
We got a lot to talk about.
I'm strongly considering upholding if the European Ryder Cup team is going to be part of the EU, I think we got to kick the Brits out.
Mm. They use the EU flag.
I'm just saying. They played the EU national anthem.
Multinational anthem?
They screwed that one up during the opening ceremonies. They should have just said, I guess, the anthem of the EU. Don't throw an adjective in there.
Or they should have just played all of them.
That's fair. That would have taken a while, and we had to get Carson Daly awkwardly looking down at the teleprompter, which was on the ground as they were on a stage. So that was quite interesting.
Great production, guys.
We have news from the world of Ja Morant that DeMichael's going to break down for us. Also, gosh, what a great weekend of football. Really starting tomorrow. This is why we lift all those weights during the summer. This is what we do. This is why we sit on the couch for hours and hours during week two. So that we can be ready for this weekend. I'm pretty fired up for it. So we'll talk about that as well. And then Blake Topmeyer's going to join us 2:35 like he does each and every Friday. We'll get his thoughts on the big weekend of college football. We'll get into the list. We'll talk about our favorite games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I guess let's start to Michael with the news of the day. And I guess it's news in the sense of we knew Ja had parted ways with Mike Miller.
Right.
But we did not know what the future of his representation was going to be and whatnot. So can you break it down for everyone in the sense of he's not going to another agency?
Nope.
He is forming a management company, though, correct? He's not forming his own agency. So this isn't like when Rich Paul formed Clutch.
Right, right.
They're forming their own management company. Mm-hmm. They will have an agent on staff, but that will not be Ja's agent. That will be an agent to perhaps entice other clients. Is that the idea?
It's more for the contract. Like, there are going to be certain people involved in this. So it's going to be an athlete advisory firm.
Okay.
That's what it is. And it's ILOC is the name of it. And it's actually created by the people around Ja Morant, you know, his mother.
So we're formalizing Team Morant.
Exactly.
Okay.
In a way. And Phil Morant is involved. His uncle, Kevin Helms, who's on his security, you know, point. He's involved, chief operating, you know, officer. So they're basically.
Shouldn't he be security officer?
Yeah. He could be, or he could. You know, I think he's past that point at this point.
All right. I was just thinking he could be CSO, like chief security officer.
He could be.
But head of IT, maybe.
Kevin's a businessman. He gets the job done. So, but yeah, basically what they're doing is the idea of this firm is not only to kind of save the athletes money, so to speak, but it's more of an educational tool as well. Like, they want to be able to empower athletes because this isn't solely for Ja, but Ja is the first client, but they're intending on, you know, getting other clients involved as well. But of course, Ja Morant, you know, being with the close ties that he has to, you know, these people. I mean, we're talking about his mother, his uncle, Kevin Helms, who he's been closely, you know, with over the last 4 or 5 years. It's basically, you know, so you mentioned the certified, you know, MBPA agent. So they're going to have an agent involved that's pretty much going to be providing guidance, like when he goes into contract negotiations. I know that's the main thing that people think about. Like, okay, how will contract negotiations work? So he'll still have an advisor, so to speak, someone who's certified in that role. They'll have an in-house marketing team, which we've seen they've basically, you know, had, you know, in a way over the last year or so. And then, of course, financial and business, you know, advisors and a legal team. So all the bases will be covered. But if you follow Ja Morant's career, you know, this seems like the most, I guess, comfortable, maybe the word, route for him. Ja's been with two agencies to this point. He broke in with Tandem.
Tanner, now the UNC
general manager,
GM, and totally not negotiating contracts for his players. Yes, of course. Sure, I'm sure Jim's not worried about the business he built from the ground up by himself. Sure, he doesn't care about that at all.
And then you got, you know, after that, he was with Mike Miller, which we talked about, you know, here in May at some point when they parted ways. And then it became clear, even though other agents, I had NBA agents calling me, like, hey, you think we really got a chance to get Ja?
Mark told me, he's like, I heard from people that I haven't heard from in like 3 years.
I'm like, look, I mean, shoot your shot, but I don't think it's going to go in. So it's an untraditional route, but it's also a route that we've seen Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid. James Harden did it for a while, but he recently re-upped with an agency. Like, there have been NBA players who've kind of moved more in the empowerment, you know, kind of role. And this is Ja Morant being the latest player to do that. But for Ja, again, going back to his career and what we know about him, it's been important for him to have people around him that he trusts. And, I mean, who better to have around you than you trust than your mom, your uncle, and, you know, basically your main security guy who's been with you hand in hand for most of your career.
Okay, so I guess the first question for me is, it seems to me the overall impact of this is, all right, either A, we have people that we didn't trust or people we didn't like doing business with, but more importantly, it seems like we'd really like to stop paying people for things that we think we could do on our own.
Yeah.
Is that a correct interpretation?
Yeah. I think that is definitely a correct interpretation in a way. You know, I think, again, part of the idea here is to save athletes money and empower them, you know, with the tools where, you know, In the statement that was provided to me, they basically said, we want athletes to be able to walk in a room with the front office and negotiate a deal on their own. So that's a little different. So it's not kind of something that, you know, the advisory firm is in, you know, they clearly stated, we are not, you know, a sports agency. This is an advisory firm. So It's something that is shifting away from that. This isn't something that just happened. Like, these people have been involved with Ja since the beginning, since the beginning of his career. And as they said, as Kevin Helms said in the statement, they've been preparing for this moment.
To me, though, this also feels like if you're just someone out there and your number one priority is the Grizzlies,
yeah,
this feels like a good thing. And this would be my argument for that.
Uh-huh.
Without having the, you know, with having an agent on staff, but essentially representing yourself, well, you're probably not going and shopping yourself, because I think there's also, there are other CBA issues. But that, to me, like, if you're just concerned about the Grizzlies, this does kind of show, like, Zach Kleiman, I feel like, has made it quite clear that he's in the Ja Morant business. But this also implies to me, like, this is Ja also stating, I'm in the Grizzlies business.
I can see that.
Because it's always the adage.
What do you mean by in the Grizzlies business?
So, think of it in these terms. Mm-hmm. Whenever I used to see a coach that all of a sudden would move agencies and sign with Jimmy Sexton, I was like, that guy's gone.
Yeah.
Because you don't sign with the agent. Like, if you have your guy and you're just trying to re-up your own deal, that's not what you hire Jimmy Sexton for.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy can shop you around and get the best offer possible.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're not really an agency, there's also CBA implications. But to me, it's like, okay, well, you're not going to go and start hypothetically throwing around and shopping Ja Morant around.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this would be the one risk that I would say. I firmly believe the reason why it took Lamar so long to get his big deal. So remember when Lamar was played on their franchise tag?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Lamar had the weird knee tweak, which I think it was pretty obvious to me all along. It was, I don't have a big deal. My knee doesn't feel great. I'm not risking it when I got $0 guaranteed for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. But I do think had Lamar had an agent, they would have gotten something done. But because Lamar basically was representing himself and they weren't able to work out the deals like professional deal makers do,
yeah,
I thought that worked against him. And then I think the other big risk for me, though, is when you have an agent,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I think oftentimes, so my dad comes from the world of being a food broker. And essentially, to put it in these terms, here's what my dad did. Companies that wanted to put their product into Sam's Club or Kroger, they went to him to do it.
Yeah.
So when you first use my dad, and he gets your product in and you make a bunch of sales, you're like, high five, this guy's awesome. But then when your company starts doing well, you think, I don't need this guy anymore.
Yeah, yep.
I can do this on my own, mm-hmm, and you cut him out. It's kind of a hire to be fired business. And so I do just wonder with Ja, like sometimes you need an agent also to kind of put out fires.
Yeah.
And so I do just wonder, I don't think it's all that risky, but I also think at the same time, it's like, I think there could be some unintended consequences in the sense that now there's nobody in between me and the Grizzlies when we negotiate something.
Yeah.
And negotiations could get personal.
Yeah.
See Mike and Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
And like, I do wonder if that can cause unforeseen friction.
You know, I think in certain cases it would, for sure. You know, you would like to hope in what we see more in the NBA, well, we see it a lot in the NFL too, but a lot of this stuff gets done in the offseason, and that would be your hope and intention with Ja, because it gets real tough in this situation where if we're talking about going into the season and you're negotiating, and that's when it gets tougher. But in this case, you know, you handle this stuff in the summer. From the Grizzlies' standpoint, Ja's standpoint, like right now we still know how important he is to the Grizzlies, so I don't think we're to a point where contract negotiations would be difficult.
No, this is the other thing I was wondering, because I was mentioning this with, I was mentioning this to George off the air before we went to the air.
Yeah.
So what was your stat used last summer? Was it 13 of 4? How many guys were eligible for Supermaxes? The only guy last summer that had never signed a Supermax was Gobert,
Rudy,
correct?
Gobert. Yep,
that was it. Supermax eligible and didn't sign a Supermax. And then they gave him a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But it was like shorter terms, but it wasn't a Supermax.
Mm-hmm.
one of the at least behind the scenes reasonings for the Mavericks shipping off Luka was they didn't know about paying the Supermax.
The Supermax, yep.
And so you initially roll your eyes like, well, if a 25-year-old that's a five-time first-time NBA or first-team NBA guy is not worth the Supermax, who is? But as we started to see the season play out, and now everybody's kind of getting their grasp around the new CBA.
Yeah, they're running from it.
I do wonder if there is this, wait a minute. Now, we wouldn't have done it the way the Mavericks would. I'm sure most people would be like, I still would have shopped him.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder if behind the scenes there are a lot of people going, maybe the Supermax thing is not the way to go. It's like, okay, maybe if you have Jokic, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you have...
And even his GM mentioned the idea of trading him this summer.
Correct. I mean, he worst case scenario. Listen, I don't ever want to talk about this, but let's talk about this. That was an all-timer. But like to the point of the... like, let's use the Celtics as the example.
Yep.
And so here the Celtics are. They have Tatum and Brown, and you've won your title. So there's that whole thing. But now they have Tatum hurt. You're going to, I would imagine, start doing the math of, man, we got a lot of money right now that's not leading to anything. Mm-hmm. And so is there going to be a reevaluation of the Supermax, how people are going to give it out?
Yeah.
I do think Ja probably falls into the category of, though, like maybe this will end up being an advantage for the smaller markets. While they can't offer $28 million no-show jobs, maybe the small market teams are going to be the ones that are like, hey, we just got to be more aggressive. Like, if we got a guy, we're going to supermax him. But, like, yeah. I can see in the future where there's some friction on John is management firm go in thinking supermax, and then the Grizzlies are sitting going like, we kind of like a deeper roster.
Yeah, because you're more hands-on in this situation,
correct.
Right?
Well, it's personal. It's like
it gets real,
you don't have the buffer to do the tough negotiating.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, the teams want the player, but the teams would like the player on the most favorable terms.
Right.
So anything else that you think that is significant from this?
Not right now. I think when we talk about the significance of this, it'll be when we get to that point. You know, like I know this summer people were talking about the idea of, oh, you know, technically Ja Morant is extension eligible and all that. It's irrelevant right now. It becomes now with each passing season, it's going to be more and more important. I think potentially next summer, the summer after that, when I think summer 2020, what is that, 2028? That's when we'll really kind of
seven, right? So next summer
will be 2027. Like I think 2028 summer is the one where we'll really dive into the idea of what type of contract, because
you don't think they'll, so
we have 20, he can't 26 even get a supermax right now.
Right, but I was saying, what my thought was, though, do you think that, because what we've seen a lot of times is teams get like a year ahead of it.
Yeah.
So you think that that's unlikely? You think it's more likely that...
They'd still be a year ahead in that case.
Is he not through 20? I thought the... What's his deal right now?
He did 5 years, and I believe it was 20. Yeah, so...
Ja's contract... currently gets him through the 27-28 season.
27-28.
So what I'm saying is you don't think the summer of 27?
I get what you're saying now. I get what you're saying. Yeah. But
rather than having him play on the expiring deal, if you will, you know what I mean?
But that's the Grizzly side. On his side, I think depending on how this season goes, it's going to be a conversation of if he's even Supermax eligible.
Right.
So that's when I think it'll get tougher, because if he has the type of season that I think he'll have, potentially make all NBA, if he stays healthy, the roster is set up for him to have one of his best seasons yet, because he's going to have the ball a lot. They got shooters around him. It's set up for him to do well. If that's the case, you're going to get into a situation where it's, do I want to go ahead and take this contract now, or do I want to potentially gamble, wait a year,
sure,
and make myself Supermax eligible?
Okay, so we also on Monday... Sticking with our theme of what are we talking about on Monday, we also have Media Day.
Yep.
For you, what are kind of the, as you kind of outline what you're interested in, what you wanted to discuss, where are you kind of starting on Monday?
I'm starting with Toronto Cicelo. I think the entry front is pretty clear at this point. I think we're going to hear more details or whatever, you know, in terms of Jaren Jackson Jr., but I think everyone knows at this point he'll be back very early. If he misses any regular season time, it won't be much. If he misses regular season time, so with that being the case,
yeah, it seems like right. The only question is like, is he gonna be back in camp?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
he'll be doing something in camp.
Right. Is he clear for five?
How much will he technically be able to do in camp will be the question. But Zach Edey, I don't expect him to miss some overabundance of time either. I don't think we're talking next year when he'll be back.
No, but I feel like the issue with Edey is because they have the Europe trip.
Yeah.
They have so many games like early.
They got them.
Like,
yeah.
It feels like even if he gets to like the first or second week of December, it's still like 25 games. But then the other issue for me is it's not like he's going to be there for install. Like he's going to be physically present. I almost get more annoyed at the fact that like he's not just going to be a part of camp, even though I know he's physically
gonna,
but like he's not participating in camp.
Yeah, and I think he'll be fine. He'll get the, you know, what do they call them, the mental reps and all that. And he's physically good enough where if they're doing walkthroughs or something, I think he can participate. But Islo is what it comes down to for me, simply because like we've seen the Grizzlies under one head coach pretty much with this core intact. Since Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. have played together, they've had one head coach outside of a 9-game regular season end last year, where that coach, Isolo, basically said, hey, I only have 9 games.
Yeah,
I'm doing what I can.
To my thinking was, if you made a judgment one way or the other, I was like, I don't know how you did. Like, it's like he came in and he was trying to steady his ship. But it's not like he's implementing anything. It's basically he's just like, all right, I'm problem solving.
Yeah, you just tinker a little bit here, tinker a little bit there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like interim football coach comes in. You're saying, oh, we're going to line up in the power eye a little bit more, but you can't do anything fancy.
Right. You can maybe change, like, all right, we need to go more run heavy or whatnot.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I think right after that is, but I don't know if this is a media day question. It's more of like a training camp and then like, let's get into the season. It's like, how does kind of the crowd at the three sort itself?
That's a big one. And I don't know if it'll sort, like you said it right, because I don't know if it'll sort itself out soon at all. I mean, I think it'll carry over to the regular season, because I've done the math on this, and here's the way I look at it. Ja Morant's going to play, Ty Jerome's going to play, Scottie Pippen Jr. is going to play. You have three other kind of backcourt wing spots left in a 10-11-man rotation. And you got three spots. To me, you got five names. You got Cedric Cowart. You got Vince Williams Jr., you got Gigi Jackson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jalen Wells. Five guys, three spots. Jalen Wells is going to play. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is going to play. Now you got three guys, one spot. You got Gigi Jackson, Cedric Cowart, your first-round pick, and Vince Williams, a guy who everybody at this time a year ago was high on. So,
well, it seems to me like the one thing that we could learn about Isolo, and it's like maybe this was situation-dependent, maybe it'll be different with a full training camp and whatnot. It's like, Isolo did not have the Vince Williams gene.
Mm-mm. I mean, he shouldn't have.
He was not playing well, but you could tell it was like, he would put him in for 3 minutes and he was like, okay, that's done.
Yeah. And I think that's something you're going to get from him as a coach. He gives me that no-nonsense, no production, you're getting out of here. You produce, you're going to play. Taylor Jenkins guys were playing 31, 32 minutes. I think you can see some guys playing 34 minutes this year.
You don't think he's going to go, because I was always under the impression the big rotations, more guys, fewer minutes. I was more under the impression that that was kind of his thing.
Taylor Jenkins' thing?
No, that was Tuomas' thing.
Oh, I mean, it could be, but it was Taylor Jenkins' thing, and I don't think that's the case, because when he took over, granted, it was the end of the season, it was a playoff push, so I don't know how much stock you can put into this, but Edey's minutes, for sure, that's the one you can put stock into. His minutes jumped. It was the first time we really were seeing him play more than 30 minutes in any game, and he was consistently doing it when he stayed out of foul trouble. Ja Morant's minutes went up. That was also the best basketball that Ja was playing of the season, so it made sense for him to play that much. But he leaned on the starters a little bit.
I think those two things might have also been related.
Oh, for sure. 100%. So, I mean, I think he's going to play those guys a little bit more, but – it also goes back to the question with the wings. And you know, we just got a Grizzlies update.
Oh, gosh. What's our latest update? Just don't tell me it's an injury.
Oh, it is.
Okay, awesome.
It is. It's injury updates on pretty much all the players, and some of this stuff is the stuff that I've already reported.
It's updated. All right. Yeah. So you want to go ahead and read them out?
Sure. Brandon Clark has fully healed from his high-grade right PCL. This is what we had already said. Cedric Coward is expected to be a full participant in training camp.
Hold on. Yep. Go back to Brandon. There's a however.
However, in connection with recent offseason training, he has experienced right knee.
There we go.
You know that word?
That would be synovitis.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Maybe.
So he'll have a procedure done, but a full recovery is expected.
Mm. Aren't they always?
So here's the Jaren Jackson Jr. one. He's been cleared. Well, he underwent the procedure on the foot. He has been cleared to begin ramping up, which is what we just discussed. He is expected to return to play in 4 to 6 weeks. You know what 4 to 6 weeks is from now?
That would be basically opening night. Yeah.
4 to 6 weeks. So he's pretty much in that timeline where we talk about either beginning of the season or a little bit after it. But the 2 to 6 weeks puts him.
I would say the ED part is positive, too.
The ED part is very positive. And I think that's the case. Like, again, I've been saying that I'd only heard good things about him. So with ED, he's expected to return to play 6 to 9 weeks. Man, I wish they listed these in months. It makes you really – you got to think this out. Six to 9 weeks is what? Two?
Well, I mean, to me, that leads you to think that he could be back. Because I had kind of basically set my over-under. Okay, so help me out with this. He's expected to return to play.
Yeah.
Are they saying he'll be good to go?
Which player?
With Edie.
Yeah, return
to play. Okay, so yeah, that to me, like, that beats what I was, because I kind of in my head was saying, like, anything around December 1 I would view as a win.
Yeah.
All right, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks would be November 8th.
Yep.
So another 3 weeks would be that Thanksgiving week.
Mm-hmm. He'll be back for December.
And
that's
then
a win. That's a win with Edie.
I would say that's definitely a win with Edie. If you would have said, give me that when they first announced it, I would have taken it. I would also argue the Brandon Clark update.
However.
This is the classic when I hear you went to Europe and got a surgery they don't do here. That doesn't exactly think knee's all good to go.
Yeah. And Brandon Clark also said, about a week ago, that I'm all good to go, ready for camp. So,
had he had the arthritis? Let's see. What is it?
Man,
this also feels very news dumpy. Let's see. All right,
it does say will require, so I'm assuming it hasn't happened,
hasn't happened
yet.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. This is also giving me Steven Adams PTSD. Now, in fairness, I felt like anytime you'd ask Steven about the knee, Steven was like, "We'll see."
Yeah.
But then everybody else was like, "Well, it's good to go. Good to go. Good to go." It's like, I never got the same answer from Steven.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty much like he was never confident, it felt like,
right,
with Steven Adams.
Brandon Clark, almost like he was like, we'll see.
Yeah. Brandon Clark, talking to him the other day, he sounded like he was ready to go.
All right. So those are the injury updates for the Grizzlies. Anything else Grizzlies-wise before we take a break and talk some football?
Nah, I think that pretty much hits the nail on the coffin right there. We got the injury stuff out of the way.
What is the Grizzlies front court?
It's gonna be Jock Landale and Santi Aldama. Gear up. Or they go small. We talking about all these wings.
Yeah.
Throw Gigi at the four.
What did we come up with the Harbor Town five instead of the Hamptons five?
The Harbor Town
five. Yeah, that's where we can go with. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer joins us. Massive, massive weekend of college football. Let's talk about it next with him right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts, Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week wherever you find your podcast. Follow him on X at @BTopmeyer. Blake, thank God we don't have to, but if you could only watch one game this week, what would you watch?
This might be a controversial choice, and it's the one I'm covering. I would choose Ole Miss LSU. Maybe that's because that game has been so good the last two seasons. You got the coaching personalities with Lane Kiffin and Brian Kelly. So you're right. I'm glad I don't have to, but if I could only choose one, that'd be the one.
It's funny this because I think everybody agrees what a great weekend it is, and I'm find myself being the person that said y'all his whole life. And I find myself gravitating towards Penn State, Oregon, because I just don't know what either team is. Like, that's at least it's a barometer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would actually be my number two choice. I mean, you know, I think I would put Alabama, Georgia number three, even though that could be a great game as well and a really consequential game for Alabama. But yeah, I would put Oregon, Penn State too, just because I want to figure out whether Penn State's for real or not. I mean, the first 4 weeks of the season told us absolutely nothing about Penn State. I don't think there's a team in the top 25 we've learned less about through 4 weeks than Penn State. I mean, their season starts this weekend. They had four straight byes, basically, to open the season. So, yeah, I think that's fair. And Oregon as well. Like, I think you and I looked at Oregon similarly in the preseason. Like, I was a little bit cautious with Oregon. I thought, like, I don't know if I'm all in on Oregon this season, but
yes, I was very much the same way. And then I saw what they did to Gundy, and I know that team's god awful, but it's also like, man, they can kind of name their number. But I've done it. I have put money on Penn State and James Franklin and Drew Aller in a big game.
Wow, you're not. You say that as a charitable donation? You said you put money on them?
Yeah, no, I literally, it's the classic. My formula right now is I'm riding the teams that are not traveling 3,000 miles, and the fact that every single person I know thinks that, and myself included, thinks Oregon's going to win the game, that I'm like, we all have to be wrong.
Right. Yeah, no, I see that. I look at that line, Southern Cal, Illinois as well.
Yep.
You know, Illinois just got boat raced last week. But now they're getting 6.5 points, last I saw, as the home team. And Southern Cal, even though they beat Purdue this season, does not have a very good history the last few years when they're traveling across multiple time zones. So,
and their coach is complaining about it. You know what I mean? Like, we played the latest game in the country last week, and now we're playing the earliest. It's like,
yeah. Isn't it interesting, these coaches, and it's not to the same extreme, but Kiffin complaining about drawing Oklahoma as a rival. It's like, yeah, you guys are just now realizing what we've been saying for years. Like, this conference realignment stuff is kind of stupid, especially in the Big Ten, the fact that you got teams, you know, in the Pacific time zone and then the Eastern time zone in the same conference. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't be that way. But, yeah, it's like the coaches have finally realized, oh, maybe this wasn't a great idea after all. Not that they got a vote in it anyway. But it is sort of ironic to hear the complaints finally coming from them. It's like, yeah, we've been saying this for 4 years now.
I do think we hit – this is the – I know that everybody had this game circled, so I'm probably just preaching to the choir. I do think we hit peak college sports in 2025. San Jose State is going to play Stanford at 6:30 on the ACC network.
Oh, baby. That's exactly what you think of when you think ACC. Right?
Absolutely. Right there.
San Jose State and Stanford. I wonder what the ratings will be for that game. I mean,
no chance. No chance the ACC network subscribes to Nielsen. They don't want the number out there.
That's true. I did get my dollar bill in the mail from Nielsen recently. That was a nice little surprise coming in the mail, getting that dollar or two of cash. I was not selected to be part of the rating service, but you get that initial dollar bill in the mail. That's always a good feeling.
Yeah, no, my wife ended up like, she's like, oh, well, they sent me like so and so. I was like, sweetie, you did like an hour of work and got like $2. Like, I was like, I'm not really sure it's a great return. Like, you are worth more than that.
I know. We don't stop and think that, though. Somebody
right.
Send you $2 cash in the mail.
Yeah, that's a like, win. It's found money.
They're always the crispest $1 bills, too.
Fresh like, from the mint.
You almost feel it. Like, are these things counterfeit? And, well, I guess nobody would know because nobody worries about $1 bills being counterfeit.
It's like the money's so new, you can hear it crying like a newborn. That's the great stuff. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I know we've been talking about it on the show, I find myself slightly encouraged now that every time you read a new Big Ten idea that they want to socialize about the playoff, the fact that now it feels like almost the masses are collectively ignoring it, I kind of feel like it seems like we're trending towards maybe we give the 12-team team the 12-team thing a shot longer than maybe I had anticipated.
Yeah, I think so, and it was interesting, and you're touching on this, like when Dellinger's got his report out this week that the Big Ten is now socializing like 28 to 32 team playoff plans, like, I mean, that was met. It wasn't even like there was a vitriolic reaction.
Everybody's just like moving on. Like,
yeah, you shrug your shoulders and be like, okay, this is a stupid idea that's going nowhere. We're not even going to give this the time of day. And I don't know if that's because, like, these ideas are now coming out during the season, and so we actually have games to focus on, or if it's just like we've seen this song and dance from the Big Ten before. Nobody's taking it seriously at this point. I'm kind of with you, and we heard the comments from Rich Clark to the reporters that were in Chicago this week in the latest CFP meeting that resulted in nothing, which is like every CFP meeting, right?
Yes.
But the latest comments from Rich Clark saying like, hey, maybe they'll stay at 12 for another year, which I don't think he really has any inside information on things, but it is just a reality of the situation. Like, that December 1st deadline is approaching. And sure, I think the deadline maybe could be moved a little bit, but there does come a point where you have to make a decision for at least next year. And I think the ideal scenario for those of us who would be kind of interested with it staying at 12 would be they kick the can down the road for another year, and then this year's 12-team playoff is just thriller after thriller after thriller, right? And so they can't, in good conscience, of course, they do a lot of things not in good conscience in college sports these days. But, you know, I do think, like, if this is just an elite 12-team playoff, that makes it harder then to go to some other, you know, screwy system. So I think that's maybe, you know, for those of us like you and I that are maybe interested in seeing this 12-team playoff play out a little bit longer before we go away from it, I wouldn't mind if they just sort of state the decision, say we're going to do the 12-team playoff for at least 2026, and that way, the 2026 season, and so that way we get to see what the playoff looks like this year, and hey, maybe if the move to the straight seeding results in some great matchups and we get a better first round, maybe they just stay 12 teams for a little bit longer.
You know, it's kind of like our NCAA tournament strategy, where it's like, let the dysfunction and the lack of consensus work in our favor. Nobody's asking for tournament expansion. And honestly, I don't feel like anyone's really asking for playoff expansion. And it's like, because they're so dysfunctional and everybody's got such competing interests, nobody can kind of agree on anything. It's like, all right, let us just keep doing the 12-team playoff. And you're right. This year, now that we have straight seeding, I think our first round matchups could be better. Let's get a better quote-unquote tournament this year. And then that's how you build the momentum. It's like, why would you change this? And that's kind of what ends up happening almost every year with the NCAA tournament. It's like, it works. Why would you change this?
Right. And you know, there was a big public mutiny a year and a half ago when the talks were really probably most serious about expansion. And it wasn't just media types. It was, you know, pretty vitriolic blowback from the public about changing the NCAA tournament. Now, I don't know if that's going to bias a 68 tournament in perpetuity or 68 team. But I feel like it has bought us a few more years here, and I think you're right. You know, it was interesting, whenever the SEC and Big Ten announced their little alliance that they're not calling an alliance, it's been about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, I guess they announced this, the general reaction I thought of a lot of media types was, oh, isn't this awesome, these two leagues that never really seem to get along with each other, the commissioners had a rivalry, now they're going to work together to solve big issues. I actually felt the opposite of that all along. I thought the most dangerous thing for college sports as a whole would be the Big Ten and the SEC getting along.
You and I were 100% that. I was like, listen, I'm not saying this is the beginning of a breakaway, but if they start working together and liking it, that's how they break away.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, because I don't buy for a second they're going to solve all these big issues for everybody else. Like,
no,
if they start getting too buddy-buddy, they're going to say, we're going to go into business together, just the two of us, and forget everybody else. But so now that they're not really, like, in harmony anymore, I mean, I don't think it's as bad. I think Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti get along fine. I think it's much better than it was between Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren, and even on back the line.
Delaney.
You know, between the Delaney and Mike Slive, and there's been a rivalry, you know, between the commissioners in those conferences for years now. I don't think it's like that between Sankey and Petitti, but the conferences aren't agreeing with each other. And again, as we've been, the two of us have kind of been saying for all along, a little, not only a little bit, a lot of disagreement between those two leagues. I think that's actually a good thing for college sports as a whole. You get those two guys nodding their heads together, that's bad for everybody else if those two ever get synced up.
We're talking with Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week. Wherever you get your podcasts, follow him on X at B Topmeyer. All right, let's go to that game that you are covering, because I do think it's interesting in the sense that I don't want to act like, hey, man, this game's not getting a TV and I'm not watching it. But it feels like one of the least buzzy Alabama-Georgia games I can remember, basically like in the last, you know, basically in the Kirby Smart era after whatever, year one. Is that because Alabama has a loss? Is that because it's not Nick Saban's Alabama? What do you think it is?
I think it's number two. I think it's because it's not Nick Saban's Alabama. And the invincibility cloak has slipped off the Tide, and so it's still a big game. It's a big game. I think it's almost a bigger game because Alabama does have the loss, right?
Yeah, like, I agree. Mean, like, it does have more of the NFL, like, hey man, like, hungry dog here.
Right. And oh, what? I mean, let's play it out a little bit. Let's play it out as Alabama loses, which is what the odds makers say, right? Georgia at home being the favorite, understandably so. They've been a juggernaut at home under Kirby Smart.
My favorite stat, they've not lost this decade.
Oh, my goodness.
Jake Bentley, remember that Jake Bentley game in the rain in 2019? Yeah. That's the last loss.
Yeah, which was truly, truly stunning that even happened. But, and so then if Alabama loses, they're sitting on two losses. Maybe they could get to the playoff at 9-3, but still, that third loss feels like a haymaker. And you could have undefeated Vanderbilt coming to town, assuming
don't threaten me with a good time, Blake.
Yeah. If Vanderbilt beats Utah State this week, which they should, Vanderbilt's going to be coming to Tuscaloosa with a chance to deliver the knockout blow on Alabama. And then even if Alabama survives that, then they would go to Columbia Mo to face Mizzou, which would be defeated. Mizzou faces UMass this week. They're not losing to UMass. And so
you sure? Tigers, which,
oh, no. I think we're losing. Are you there? Struggling.
That is to beat Georgia on the road.
Okay, sorry. We lost you there. Okay. Here's where I want you to go back to. Do you realize that Alabama-Vanderbilt game? I don't know if they'll get dropped with a loss to Georgia, but we could have an Alabama-Vanderbilt game where Vanderbilt is the ranked team.
If Alabama would get dropped either, but that's the thing about Vanderbilt is when it beat Alabama last year, I mean, it was just so stunning because we didn't know at that point that Vanderbilt was pretty competent and kind of salty. Like, yeah, they'd won some games earlier in the season, but their schedule really hadn't heated up yet.
Yeah.
And so it just seemed like this shocking result. I mean, if Alabama loses this weekend and Vanderbilt comes in there undefeated, like, yeah, it would still be a little bit jarring just because the name on the jersey says Vanderbilt. But people that have been following this for the last couple of years, like, I think – everybody's going to have that game circled a little bit if Vanderbilt goes down there and undefeated and Alabama's sitting on two losses. Whereas last year, I mean, Alabama-Vanderbilt was off the radar. Nick Saban was talking about how, you know, everybody goes into Vanderbilt and it's like a home game. That's the one place where it's not hard to play. And that was when Vanderbilt was still, you know, lowly cellar-dwelling Vanderbilt at that time. So, yeah, you're right. It's going to be very strange to see Vanderbilt potentially as the only ranked team, or at the very least as the better ranked team, if Alabama loses this weekend.
Well, it's along the same lines of why when we had the schedule release or the annual opponent release this week and then the full schedules, it was part of where when everybody saw the annual opponents and was just firing off takes, it's like, I get it. The culture is you got to have an opinion on everything. But I just found myself going, how do you know what these teams are going to be in 4 years? This is the most year-to-year I think the sport has ever been. And I can make a case that Vanderbilt with Clark Lea, because not only is he from Nashville, he's a Vanderbilt alum. They are playing the game. They're taking transfers. They're spending money. They are actually trying to compete. I'm not saying that they can max out and be Ohio State, but what I'm saying is, why can't they be a mid-tier SEC program when you consider how much money they have? Like, there's no reason they can't if they're going to lower their standards, which also appears that they're going to be willing to do. So, like, why is everyone just freaking out? It's like, I don't even know what these schools are going to be in 5 years.
Well, and the bigger point to that is, I agree with you, but also the fact that these annuals are only one-third of the conference
yes.
schedule. And we've talked about this in the offseason. If you get a little bit of an easier draw on the annuals, it means there's a greater percentage chance that you're going to draw harder teams in your six open slots on the rotational schedule and vice versa. If you have three of the harder annuals, it's a greater percentage chance that you're going to have the easier teams on your rotational docket. And so I do think it's going to be a lot more balanced in this new construct than what it's been for the last multiple decades.
It's the first SEC, to your point, it was the first SEC talking point that I was like, I don't think they're full of S. Like, I was like,
yeah.
When they were, this is the most balanced schedule we've had in the history of the conference. And I was like, when you actually look at year by year, when they stacked up everybody's schedules, the first talk comes to mind is like, man, that's pretty fair. Like, there's nothing that's going to be a perfect system, but it's like they've got to schedule 16 teams with 9 games apiece. I was like, those all look pretty good to me.
Yeah, here's where I fall on the rival assignments. I did not get worked up at all by who got the easy draw, who got the hard draw. I mean, yeah, we're all looking at that, and it's worth pointing out, but it's not something to get worked up over. Where I did think – and I wrote about this. We talked about it on our SEC Football Unfiltered podcast. I think the bigger thing was the interruption of some rivalries.
Yeah.
I mean, it is eye-opening to think about Alabama-LSU is now only going to be played twice in a four-year span. I mean, that game has really been one of the games of college football for the last 25 years. I mean, in some years it was the game. It not only, you know, people think of it now, it's like, oh yeah, it determined who would go to the SEC championship. Like, no, not only that, there were some years, you know, back in the BCS era when it determined who's going to be left standing for the BCS championship. You got to survive. I mean, it was a playoff game. Let's call it what it was. It was a playoff game in November that wasn't called a playoff game. But in the two-team BCS era, Alabama and LSU functioned as an annual playoff game. And it just so happened the one year they played twice in the playoffs, right? They got the rematch in the real national championship game and the script flipped. So that, to me, when, you know, I didn't lose my head over it, but in so much as there was controversy with the annual assignments, for me, it wasn't so much about, oh, who got the easy draw, who got the hard draw, because as we're saying, in the scope of a 9-game schedule, you can balance that out quite a bit more. But the fact that we're losing Alabama LSU on an annual basis, and as I wrote about this week, I don't think it's a travesty, but I do think for the millennials who kind of grew up on Florida, Tennessee being the game of September for a decade plus, it's kind of a bummer for me to think that, you know, Florida, Tennessee, I know it's not the biggest rivalry in college football, but man, if you're our age, you know,
it kicked off the start of real football season, because CBS had the U.S. Open for tennis, and because of that, CBS's SEC contract did not start until the third week of the year. And so the first 2 weeks, it felt like everybody was playing their bye games and whatnot. And it's like, once you got to Tennessee, Florida, that third week of the year, it's like, all right, real football's on. Like, let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. And the personalities of that game, I know it's changed, but and I've heard for years, like, oh, that game doesn't mean what it used to. And that is a factual statement. But also the idea that that's not a rivalry anymore. Like, I'm sorry. I lived in Knoxville for more than 6 years when both of those teams were down, and it is absolutely still a rivalry. Tennessee fans detest Florida. They do not like them at all. They don't like Alabama, but I think there is a certain portion, not all, but a certain portion of Tennessee fans have, like, a little bit of quiet respect.
I would say
Bama.
There's a begrudging respect was the words that came to mind.
Yeah, there's no respect at all for Florida.
No, it's like, Florida, you know, you wear your jorts and whatnot, your Tebow jersey. Yeah. Tebow's not here to save all your criminals. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think Florida quite feels the same way because, you know, they have bigger rivals and because they've dominated that rivalry, for decades now, not particularly at the Swamp, but even, you know, they've had the better edge of the rivalry substantially for many, many years. So I don't know if it's quite as vitriolic on the Florida side, but, I mean, I think about games that I've covered throughout that series when, and you didn't always know it because the games were played in September, but, it, you know, you look back on it and think, boy, these were two mediocre teams playing, but the environment in the stadium that day didn't feel like it. And so, yeah, it's not Alabama-Tennessee. It's not cocktail party. It's not Florida State-Florida. But that is still a big game. It's not what it was in the 90s, but that going to twice every 4 years and a couple other rivalries as well. That is a bit of a bummer. To me, that was the bigger deal, particularly Alabama-LSU, than who got the easy draw, who got the hardest draw. That's going to kind of come out in the wash.
How nervous is Tennessee to go to Starkville tomorrow?
I think it's the history as much as anything. I know, you know, Mississippi State's sitting on the 4-0 record. They got the win against Arizona State. But I think it's more the history of Heupel having lost at Arkansas last year, had the consequential loss at South Carolina a few years ago. Overall, Josh Heupel is a fine coach on the road. He's not great on the road. He's also not terrible on the road. He's fair to Midland on the road. It's just that he had some consequential, and he's been so good at home those road losses really stand out. And they were to teams that you thought, I don't really know if they had much business losing to, particularly last year to Arkansas. And so I think from that perspective, it does feel like there's a little bit of a boogeyman in the closet there. And maybe, you know, that seems disrespectful to Mississippi State because they are sitting on a 4-0 record. But no, this more feels like the Arkansas-type scenario last year where, you know, Arkansas wasn't a doormat, but it was a team that you thought on paper, yeah, Tennessee should be able to beat Arkansas even if it is on the road, and it didn't happen. That to me is what this game is. Like, you're playing a competent team, a team that I think kind of is sort of like in that Vanderbilt mode.
Yeah.
Last year, I'm not saying their style of play, but
no,
like
but they're built. They look better. Like in terms of, yeah. I mean, literally, like they physically look more like an SEC football team, because that was the thing that stood about Vanderbilt last year. Is like when you looked at them on the lines of scrimmage, you're like, okay, that doesn't look like a G5 team. Like, I don't know if they have the depth, but they do enough that's weird on offense that's going to give you some problems. Like, yeah, I think that's a fair comp.
Yeah, and as we saw, Vanderbilt can lay a haymaker on somebody. So that to me is what this game is. Like, I think Mississippi State's going to get somebody this year. Maybe they already have. Maybe Arizona State is that team, and that's that. But I think they can get somebody in the SEC. Somebody that's not Kentucky. Somebody. I think they're going to land one on somebody. I don't know if it's this week or not. I could also see, you know, Tennessee, you know, laying waste to them, because Josh Heupel's teams also have a tendency to do that. They either like,
especially against it. Remember, like when they first went to Missouri, and it's like it's the teams that run his offense. Like you'll look up and you're like, what was I thinking? Like he beats them like 38-7. Like, you know what I mean? Like when they run the same offense.
Yeah, because the same thing that can happen to him sometimes, that warp speed 3-and-out, can happen to the opponent. And if that happens to your opponent, next thing you know, they look up and they're...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.